So,
hi. Really excited to have you here, Anne.
I'm excited to be here.
Yay. How's it going, Britt?
Good, yeah. I'm excited to be here too. This is a topic that we have been, Jackie, I think you've been encouraging this conversation to happen for quite some time. So it is.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to just talk about it, and I'll let you introduce it. But yeah, just a little how I'm feeling.
Cool.
Slightly nervous, maybe too. But
oh no, this is gonna be eye opening.
Nothing to be nervous about.
Mental health and all of that stuff sometimes makes me feel vulnerable, and as Jackie knows, I have a hard time opening up sometimes. But yeah, that is why I feel nervous, not because of our guest. She came well prepared, and yeah. So, anywho, this is not about me. But
no, Jackie, it's okay. For some reason, like, yeah, if you've been listening, following along this season, then I'm kind of giggling to myself right now, thinking about Vince saying that sometimes outreach can feel soul sucking. So if that's you and you're feeling like, oh gosh, work is really getting me down, this is a good episode to tune into. We're going to cover mental health today, and we've got a mental health professional with us. Anne, thank you for joining. Before we kick things off, I'm going to let you know a little more about Anne, and then we'll kind of get into it. So Dr. Anne Welsh is a distinguished psychologist and an executive coach with a profound affinity for supporting women in leadership and aiding working parents across diverse career landscapes. She began her career at Harvard. Dr. Welsh since has pivoted, dedicating her life to unraveling the interplay between career aspirations, personal fulfillment, and women's mental health throughout lifespan. Her coaching brings together research and real-life experiences to hone leadership skills, improve emotional intelligence, and create work-life integration. I think all things that are probably important to most of us that are tuning in. So welcome to the show, Anne.
Thanks so much for having me. Again, I'm really really looking forward to this conversation, and I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. We appreciate that. So first and foremost, I know I've read your bio, but if you don't mind, maybe in your own words, giving us a quick primer on who you are, what your background is, and about your specific expertise and how it relates to navigating work-related pressures.
Yeah. So, you know, as you said, I'm a clinical psychologist and an executive coach. My psychology career started out in research, and I was looking at both women's health and at career development. So kind of how do people pick careers and how do they transition into them? And so when I went into practice, I actually had this pretty extensive understanding of how careers develop over time and how people navigate wellness in that space. And in doing both executive coaching and therapy, I often am walking with people through that overlap of career and self and taking care of yourself. And then personally, my own career has taken some unexpected pivots. You know, I had what I thought was going to be my dream job at Harvard, and I ended up leaving to go out on my own. And that's been a really unexpected but fulfilling journey. So it's a little bit of this also kind of lived experience of growing and shifting career over time to fit the needs of myself and my family.
Wow, that's really cool. So you started out thinking you're going to do something entirely different.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to go to med school, got into med school, then decided, nope, don't actually want to be a physician. Went to grad school for psychology, thought I would do research, and again, kind of made a shift into practice, and because I fell in love with it in a way that I just didn't expect to.
Wow. But I know we were going to get more deeper into the conversation as how it relates to us, but maybe this is relatable too to some of our listeners. How did you know that it was the time to pivot? Like what was it about? How did you know you fell in love with this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, over time, I have made a couple big shifts, and it's always come down to getting really quiet and listening to what I want. You know, I historically think of myself as like a reformed perfectionist and a reformed people pleaser. Like I was really good at knowing what I was supposed to do and doing it. And you know, it's starting with that turning down med school was that first experience of saying, wait a minute, this is not what I want. This is what everyone wants for me. And maybe what I wanted when I was a kid, but now I'm an adult and I don't have to do this anymore. And it, you know, again, with similar process even of leaving Harvard, of saying, this is Harvard. Like, how do you walk away from this job? But also starting to recognize, like, I don't like how my life is looking with this job, and I've got to try something else because it's not working for me. And in that case, I did try to make some changes organizationally that just there wasn't the flexibility that I wanted. And so it kind of felt like I've got to prioritize myself and my family here and make a shift. And again, I ended up really happy with that change, but it was scary to do at the time, for sure.
I bet. That's really cool that you mentioned perfectionism, because I feel like that's going to be a huge topic that we even get into now. So we're going to keep that in mind. I know we have a lot of high achieving listeners that battle with perfectionism. I know I tend to. I mean, I cannot tell you how much time I spend rereading the same pitch email before I hit send. And we've been told time and time again by guests that we've had on that the email doesn't have to be perfect. We just need to do the work, right? So what are signs of being a perfectionist? Because I think sometimes the first step is identifying that you are under that umbrella. So how do I know if I'm a perfectionist, Anne?
Yeah. So I think this is such a good question, because I think there's with a lot of mental health disorders, we'll talk about the diagnosis and then the subclinical version of it. And I think there are a lot of people walking around that are like subclinical perfectionists, if you will. Right. So there's the obvious ones, right? The stereotype is like this person that's a stickler for details. Everything has to be 100%. And, you know, maybe the house is immaculate, all of these things. But really, there's a lot of us that fall just shy of that. And I think there's a couple characteristics that would go into that. And one is that there's a lot of black and white thinking around success and failure. So maybe it doesn't have to be perfect, but it sure better be close. And that tiny, tiny gap between where they are perfect and where they would be failing needs to be a lot larger in the end, right? So it's, okay, I don't have to get an A+, but a B is a failure. So, okay, maybe we can widen that range a bit, right? Or as a parent, right, maybe it's, I don't have to be that perfect Pinterest mom, but I better never, ever, ever lose my cool with my kids, or I'm a horrible parent, right? And so that really rigid thinking is one sign. Another way it can show up is just fear, like a lot of fear of mistakes, a fear of risk, or a fear of failure. So again, it's not like it has to be perfect, but it's also like mistakes are kind of debilitating in some way. It feels like there's a lot of pressure to avoid them. And then the really sneaky way I think it can show up sometimes for folks is checking out and avoiding, right? So I sometimes see people who say, you know, I'm not a perfectionist, but then I essentially won't do anything that I'm not really good at because it's too scary to fail. So you get this kind of avoidance paradigm happening instead, or detachment, right, of saying, I just don't care. But in the end, they actually do care quite a bit.
That's okay. I relate a little bit to some of those points.
Yeah.
How about you, Britt? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think I've been working a lot on the fear component, and also the perfectionism in general. I think just to relate it back to my own work life and my own goals for working on specifically my personal brand and less client focused, more personal. I used to really fear posting about myself on LinkedIn or sharing thoughts because perhaps, for example, I thought maybe this tip that I had to share was very basic and obvious, so I wouldn't share it at all. And now I try to remember when I was even starting out in PR, just how, and even as somebody who's been practicing PR for, you know, over 10 years now, how it's still so important to remember or to be reminded of the basics. And that's helped me break down that barrier of fear, that fear barrier that Anne, you mentioned. Yeah. And it's something I've been working on a lot, but that's how I'm kind of piecing it together in my mind right now, personally.
Yeah. I think for me, the avoidance is huge. And I think other people can relate to this when it comes to like even ideating campaigns. Like, I always fall back on campaigns that I know will do well, because even if it's not like a home run, it's like, oh, this is just, I know I won't fail with this one, right? And mm-hmm. like being a little more afraid to try like new things with work, because I don't want to fail. Because I think there, whether we like it or not, as PR professionals, I know that it, like failure is, or not failure, but rejection rather is like common. But I do think that there's a lot of, I get self-conscious if I'm not like winning all the time with outreach, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Makes sense. Ideation. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I even find myself delegating that more and more to people that I work with mm-hmm. because I fear of coming up with that idea that's going to fail. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to come up with the idea that doesn't do, like, isn't, like, perfect.
Not only do I have to promote it, but, gosh, yeah, exactly. I don't want to take all of the blame. Yeah. We could talk about this probably for hours, but how, kind of, like, I guess starting with the dangers of this in the workplace, Anne, how do you think these pressures impact an individual's mental health and overall well-being?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest risk is anxiety and burnout, especially when you're already a high achiever to begin mm-hmm. with. Because I think the funny thing about perfection, or maybe difficult thing, is that it's so rewarded in our culture. I mean, right, who doesn't like that feeling of getting the A+? And everyone praises you externally, right? You get all the likes on Instagram or on, you know, the mm-hmm. comments on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, when you're a perfectionist, sometimes that doesn't even feel that good. Or it feels good for like a millisecond, and then you're right on to the next thing that you have to achieve, right? Like, you don't actually sit with the positive feeling. So you're never actually really getting the positive emotions, right? You're never celebrating the wins, and you're kind of running on fumes. And mm-hmm. many of us can keep that up for a surprisingly long time, right? Like I just mentioned, I got all the way into a medical school acceptance before I started wondering, like, huh, maybe this isn't actually doing anything for me. But in the end, no matter how long you keep it up, it's not sustainable forever. And so you inevitably fail at something, which then becomes completely derailing, which is a lot of what I end up seeing in my therapy practice. Or you burn out and end up just kind of miserable. And I see a lot of that in my therapy and my coaching clients, where it's just the sense of nothing's making me happy and I don't care about anything anymore, which is kind of that hidden version of burnout. The other problem with perfection is that it ends up keeping you small, right? To what you guys were saying, right? Like, I don't do the risky campaign. I don't reach out for this one publication, right? Because I'm so scared of failure, I don't take any risks. And then I'm preventing myself from growing in my career or personally. So it really kind of hits at you from both sides almost.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Hidden version of burnout. I've noted that. That's a very interesting concept. I like that.
Yeah, I think burnout's one of those funny things where we kind of know the stereotype of like not being able to get out of bed and function anymore. But I think for a lot of people, it is that just that feeling of apathy towards everything.
Dang. I can feel like that sometimes. Not always, but sometimes I can. Yeah,
for sure. I mean, I think we can all get into that place, right? And that's often that sign that says, hey, take some time here or do something else for a little bit. Or just get some rest.
Mm-hmm.
I want to touch on this that you kind of mentioned near the beginning about when you came to the realization that you sat with yourself and really thought about it, and then kind of moving forward to how sometimes we don't really stop to enjoy our wins, because I feel like maybe those are related. What do you suggest before we move on to some of the other questions? What do you suggest for folks in the space? How do we slow down and enjoy our wins? Like, do you have any tips for that? Like, should we be taking more breaks? Or
No, that's a great question. And I will say this is something I still struggle with to this day, right? Like, I am not perfect at this either, right? I still find it really hard to say, hey, you know, good job. So to some extent, it's forcing yourself to do it, right? And saying it out loud. Because for many of us, our peers, our friends, our family are going to want to celebrate with us and are going to see the value of what we think is no big deal. So, you know, maybe you pitch that article and it gets published and your reaction is, all right, I got to find the next pitch. Tell your friends, right? Stop act like someone that would celebrate, right? What if your friend got that published? What would you do for them? And can you do that for yourself? And even if it is taking up 2 minutes to say, hey, you know, I'm going to try to like just tell myself, good job, that was impressive. That will build over time, right? Like you, it is almost a skill to practice, right? To build those new neural pathways of, I can pause. I can both be ambitious and be someone that strives for the next thing. And I can be someone that is aware of my accomplishments and can take that in. That's actually going to be fueling my ambition in the end, not interfering with it.
Well said. Yeah. I like it.
Me too. It's a good reminder, a very good reminder. I also think key here too is, for me personally, I find it way more fun to shout about my wins to my peers or like, you know, colleagues like Jacqueline or somebody else in the PR space than my family and friends. And I'm not saying this is for everybody, but so many times my family and friends just have no idea how big of a win it is because they're not in this world. But it's true. Also like very uncomfortable kind of bragging, you know, humble bragging or whatever it is that you call it to your friends or your colleagues, because they might be having a bad day and I don't want to rub my wins in their face. So are you saying that though, that like they're actually going to be excited and inspired by you, Anne, and we should kind of put that mental block in the back of our heads?
Yeah, for sure. Right. And I think a lot of us have that, I hate to use the word hang up, but that's the one that's coming to mind around, like, I don't want to brag, and yet I can say, hey, I did this big thing. And I think that shows up especially for women. I think there's a pretty gendered component around women not standing up and taking up space and saying, this is something I've achieved, because we've been told to not do that. Like, that's been socialized in us for a really long time. But in the end, you know, hopefully you're surrounding yourself with people who can both be happy for you and, you know, maybe even when they're at a place when they're struggling a bit as well.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Any follow-ups to that, Britt, before we move on?
No follow-ups.
So basically kind of just tying into this conversation, but from the other end of things, our clients, our managers, whoever is kind of watching us and paying for us to do this whole thing, how do we balance their expectations with what we need in our own mental health within work?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. And I think that is really hard, especially, you know, if you are working for kind of a hard-driving, perfectionistic manager, it's really, really hard to not do that yourself. I think a couple pieces, and one is just big picture, trying to cultivate a growth mindset, right? And recognizing that mistakes are a way to learn and are kind of an inevitable side effect of being human, and just holding that as a framework. The other pieces I would talk about or would think about would be, you know, recognizing that a lot of times when we are perfectionists, we're putting a lot of time and effort into things that don't even need to be done or aren't that important. So we need to stop and assess, like, what are, you know, what's the 20% of the work here that's going to make the big difference, and really put a ton of effort into that, and recognize that a lot of this is fluff and maybe isn't the vital thing and can be delegated, or I can tone it down there. And kind of the flip side of that is also recognizing that sometimes 80% is all you need, right? That there is a good enough, that you don't have to have that A+ on everything. And it's not, even if it feels like it's a boss driving perfection, maybe it's a little bit of you too. You know, and kind of using our own values and our own judgment around what is good enough, where are those high expectations coming from, what can I let go of? And then, like, I think the last piece is just all about boundaries, right? Recognizing that no matter where this is coming from, your boss or you, that your mental health and wellness are going to be more important than the job in the end. And you're going to maybe have to set some limits or say no, and maybe even risk disappointing people in order to do your best work on the rest of the stuff. And that's okay.
Well said. I like that you put it in perspective too. You know, at the end of the day, maybe if they do have unrealistic expectations, it's kind of not your problem, right? Is kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That, like, to some extent, you can only do what you can do, and that's going to have to be good enough.
Yeah, this is so transferable across all industries, too. I'm just fascinated by this conversation so far. And it reminds me of just as somebody who's their own boss and works on their own, keeping in mind, too, that if a client has unrealistic expectations of you hitting a home run every single month, think about, is it a client that you actually want to continue having on your roster, knowing that you're going to be facing these pressures month after month, when in reality, I personally try to picture that client as more of a, any client, as more of a long-term strategic player in the PR space. And yeah, for me personally, it's so hard to keep that in mind, because I'd never want a client to be like, oh no, I noticed I'm hearing less from her this month. And then it's all in my head. It's all in my head. I know it. I know my client is none of my clients are on the other side thinking I'm slacking off because they're hearing less of me. Like, there's a lot of research and planning and consuming that goes into our jobs. And I think now I'm just blabbering about, but that's how I like, what I like to keep in mind too, in PR at least.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, to your point, a lot of entrepreneurial spaces, when you are your own boss, and I'm in that category too, of you kind of have to play both roles, right? Like, you want things to go really well and you want to show up and serve people. And at the same time, you still get to say no, right? And I think sometimes that no feels a little harder if I'm saying no to actual income for myself or my family.
Yeah.
But your mental health has to come first in the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good reminder.
Yeah, very well said. One last to that point, I think, talking about these things too kind of helps. Not everyone has like the same relationship with like a client or a boss, but I definitely have had, I had one client that I thought had certain expectations of me, and it really was self-imposed, right? And like talking it through and realizing that, like, oh, they actually like the work that I do. I don't have to assume they don't. So might be helpful for some to remember that, you know, or talk about it more and see where, what they, I don't want to say what they truly think about you, but, you know, something, some PC version of that.
I think all of this really relates well to the next question that you have as well, or that we have in our outline here, about imposter syndrome. And like, you know, how a lot of people in our industry battle with this thing. I think in a lot of industries too. And do you have any good tips for that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's a, I don't know how many of your listeners read Adam Grant, right? But he writes a ton about leadership and personal development. He has a quote, and I'll probably butcher it, but it was something like, imposter syndrome says, I don't know what I'm doing. It's only a matter of time until everyone figures that out. Whereas growth mindset says, I don't know what I'm doing. It's only a matter of time until I figure it out, right? Imposter syndrome is common. It's incredibly common. It's the most common complaint of executives that I work with, and really everyone. And it's because adults simply don't like to learn new things. I really think that's at the heart of it, right? My 8-year-old goes to her ski lessons, right? We're in winter in Massachusetts.
Fun.
And she doesn't go to them thinking, gosh, I should already know how to ski. What if everyone finds out I don't know how to ski yet? But me, I'm learning as an adult. And I go, and I do have that thought, right? I have had the thought of,
absolutely,
God, this is so embarrassing. I don't know how to ski. Of course, I don't know how to ski. I didn't learn as a child. This is what learning looks like. But it's painful as an adult. Just, it's a different context. And yet, we are always, imposter syndrome almost always is showing up when we're stepping up a level somehow, when we're taking on a new, less familiar, more risky task, right? And in particular, in leadership and entrepreneurship, or in any kind of role where you have client-facing work that's frequent and new clients, it's always a slight shift in your skill set. So you're gonna have that feeling of, I'm learning as I go. And we just need to normalize that and exercise a little self-compassion. Because yes, you are doing something new, therefore you haven't done it before, right? Like when you stop and think about it, it doesn't make any sense to question our ability simply because we haven't done it before. And yet that's actually what we're doing when that imposter syndrome flares up.
So you mentioned growth mindset a couple of times. Can you summarize what that looks like in practice? Because I think that would be super helpful for our listeners.
Yeah, a growth mindset is essentially the idea that humans have kind of a lifelong capacity for growth and learning, and to accept learning as part of the process. You know, I have school-age kids, and they are, the schools now are all about growth mindset, right? And they have posters that say things like, mistakes mean you're learning. And I think very few people that consider themselves adults right now had that growing up. We didn't, and it was kind of like you're either smart or you're not smart. And now we have this better understanding around the idea that all skills can be developed over time, and that that's the process. And it's like a much mentally healthier place to be. And it's true, right? You can grow in new skills throughout the lifespan. There's no end to your ability to learn.
Beautifully said. And I like that. I've read tips about how to stay like mentally young your whole life. And it always stresses the importance of being comfortable with being uncomfortable and learning every day. So it sounds like that's kind of ties into that.
For sure.
We got to get uncomfortable here more with our PR work, it sounds like, which is kind of fun, you know, like learn new, try to reach out to people maybe we haven't, try new campaigns, kind of be okay with failing, but getting to play in that sandbox a little more. What are some other healthy, like what are coping mechanisms that are kind of healthy in dealing with work when work does get tough? Like what would you suggest could be something healthy that we can incorporate into our lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, we talked about boundaries and recognizing when you need to step back and when you can kind of lean in, so to speak. But I think striking that balance is really hard, especially if you're kind of an ambitious and driven person, or if you love your work, right? Which I do, right? Like I really enjoy my work. And so sometimes I have to remember to step back and rest because I don't feel tired, but I know that I'm going to be, and I have to kind of preemptively do that, right? So, I talk a lot about like checking in with yourself and making sure that something restorative is part of your regular picture. Now, that's going to look different for different people, right? It could be sleep. It could be a mindfulness practice. It could also be, I don't know, knitting or rock climbing, whatever a thing is that allows you to feel present, that maybe allows for some play or some creative expression, just something that you do purely out of enjoyment that has no performance element to it, so that you are kind of filling your cup constantly. And then, of course, some of the basic meet your needs, right? Eat, sleep, those things as well. But I think it's really important to have something outside of work that you enjoy doing and making sure that's part of your life on a regular basis.
That's a great tip.
Yes. Very great. I love it. I'm just going to leave now and end my day and go plant shopping.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Right?
Okay.
No, it's so healthy to just, I've been trying to do more of that personally, just remembering that, like as somebody again, who just, you know, doesn't have a 9-to-5 schedule, remembering that if I have a Monday where I have no meetings, I could personally treat this as a weekend day and maybe make up for that over the weekend when more people are out and about. I'm sort of an introvert and I like to go out shopping. I mean, who doesn't when there's less crowds? So personally, that's how I've been trying to incorporate some self-care into my day-to-day, remembering that I have this amazing flexibility and to take advantage of it because that could change. That's just my reaction to what you just said. I really like that reminder and those tips, Anne.
Yeah, and I'm with you on the plant shopping. I can't say no to a new plant. So.
Ah, I love it. I thought I had one other question, but Jackie, did you have anything else to say there?
I love hobbies. I think that I could climbing. Not preach. Climbing. I like to climb. I do pottery. I teach yoga. My only advice, be careful, because if you get really good at the hobbies, then the performance-related pressures do come up, and then that kind of defeats the purpose. So definitely have gone through this cycle of being like, yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, it's like with yoga. It has become, again, I've learned, like, okay, this is what I like about yoga. I can kind of put the teaching brain away. But there was a moment when I wanted to learn how to teach, and it was really hard. But to your point, Anne, I learned that I could apply myself, and it was so rewarding to gain a new skill. But then the cycle of, and I'm sure, like, we don't need to get political, but capitalism obviously plays a role, because then it's like, well, you have the skill, why not make money off of it? Yes. And then having like being a freelancer and having the not traditional schedule, just saying yes to any time a teaching opportunity pops up, and then it becomes work. And then, so yeah, that's the same thing with pottery. Pottery is the same thing, where you start making things and then people encourage you to sell the things. And then, you know, so just, I guess, boundaries, like you said, and making sure that whatever hobbies we do enjoy, like you said, having at least a space somewhere that is not like goal or performance based is so, that's your safe place, right? At least that's how I view it.
Totally.
Cool.
If, did you remember if we were managing, oh yeah, no, my question was, if we were managing a team of other, you know, PR people, what kind of tips do you have for us and to help encourage fighting imposter stigma, and also encouraging our colleagues and those that we manage, how to maintain self-care and prioritize their well-being? Like, what tips do you have there? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, I think, you know, first, a big one is just kind of creating a community of care, right? So a work culture that is built on trust and respect and connection, right? Because I think most people want to do a good job at their job and care. And if we kind of take that as baseline, then we're less likely to micromanage, and we're less likely to get kind of bickering within teams, right? If we start from care. And then I think another piece is to have a lot of flexibility around sick leave, caregiving leave, leave for whatever people need, right? If, you know, as a great example, right? If you're in therapy, you're going usually once a week, and that's an hour out of your day. And there needs to be no balking about, you know, 2 to 3 o'clock, I'm in therapy and I have to not take meetings. And so some flexibility, both long-term leave, but also those like week-to-week self-care things that need to happen. Or even if it is, I want to go to this rock climbing class and it meets at noon and I'm allowed to do that. And then I think the other big piece is a lot of role modeling, right? I think leadership role modeling about taking care of yourself and your mental health can go a very long way. And I've seen occasionally where leaders will do things like put their own therapy on their calendar, or put meditation break on their calendar. And cool. So they have permission to take it, but really it's about giving permission to everyone else to do the same. And that modeling, I think, goes a very long way.
Mm, yes.
Brilliant.
I wish this conversation happened more earlier in my career. That's really cool. I like those.
Yeah, I love that. It's nice because I think, I mean, we don't have to get into the reasons for why we're both self-employed, but I think you could say that a large reason as to why some people choose to be self-employed tends to be the lack of flexibility, or the lack of giving people the autonomy to take care of themselves during the day. So that's really a nice way to, you know, for the managers that listen, because I know we have quite a few that are in those roles, to really, you know, foster that environment. It can be important for keeping your talent, you know?
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
It goes a long way. Absolutely. Great.
So we've kind of touched on actionable tips? I know you mentioned building boundaries. Are there any other things that you would advise listeners who might be dealing actively with work-related pressures they do or?
Yeah, we talked about boundaries and kind of making sure there's time for self-care, which is all of this stuff around hobbies, but also things like go to the dentist and, right, like self-care isn't just, you know, eat chocolate and go to the spa. It is do the things that you need to do to take care of your body. And so making sure that that is happening. And then I think I would add in there, get help, right? And, I'm jumping ahead a question or two, but
that's
you know,
okay. Please do.
That, you know, if something isn't getting better on its own and you're struggling, please, please, please get help, right? If your Sunday scaries move into like Saturday or even Friday night, right? That's a sign that something's not right. And if you're unhappy to go to work every day, there's absolutely no shame in getting support. And there are a ton of resources out there. You can access therapy. You can access, you know, sometimes if your office provides like learning and development money, you can use that money for coaching, for executive coaching. And that can address a lot of the work-related stressors and problems. So that can be a wonderful, you know, free to you resource potentially. A lot of employers have EAP programs. And I know a lot of folks are, some of your listeners are self-employed. Still access therapy. And if you are self-employed and, you know, you have that flexible schedule, you might actually have a slightly easier time getting in with a therapist who might not have a ton of evening times that are after work hours. So getting support, I mean, I think that's one of the lovely things I see about the kind of this younger generation that's coming up, where some of my college students have come in and said, I just want a therapist because everybody else has a therapist. Isn't that just what you do?
Mm-hmm.
A female client who said, yeah, I won't ever even date a guy that hasn't been in therapy, right? Like, it's a baseline for being human for some people. And I think it's wonderful because it's so valuable to have that time and space to self-reflect. So that's kind of my number one tip. And it, like I said, it can be therapy, it can be coaching, there can be lots of different ways to access help and support. It can be making sure you've got regular, walks with a friend, right, where you vent, like, but that connection is a huge part of self-care in some way, shape, or form, too.
Are there any other, like, media, books, blogs, anything that you are loving these days that you think are kind of inspirational and helpful for listeners that you might recommend?
One that I read just from a mental health perspective and kind of that relationship with work is Anxious Achiever. So the woman that runs it is out of Harvard, and it started as a podcast, still is a podcast. I believe she has a book out or coming out.
Cool.
So that's a great resource. The other thing I tell people, even though I think sometimes I get groans and eye rolls, is actually get off your phone and the media.
Nice.
Right? Like, go do something that makes you feel present. And again, it's that hobbies piece, but it's also that being in a moment and not trying to improve yourself, right? Or think about what you need to do differently, but just be you and fully in a moment. And that can be a meditation practice, but that can also just be, I'm gonna, you know, do pottery and like feel the clay on my fingers and just note it, like be in this process here. Or I'm gonna go for a bike ride and like really notice the wind in my face and the feel of my legs turning the pedals, that like that is so important for mental health, that kind of brain training to stay in a moment. So yes, there's lots of resources, and maybe sometimes just turn it all off for a minute.
Me too.
I love that. I'm sure you could imagine being surrounded by yoga teachers. There's this obsession with healing, and it's like, yes, it's exhausting sometimes. I'm like, can we just be, like, exist and know that we don't, like, we're good enough, I guess.
So we don't always need to be working on self-improvement. Sometimes we can just be.
We could just exist. It's liberating. I find it liberating. I hope others do too.
Yeah, for sure.
So where can listeners find you online?
Yeah, I mean, they can definitely check out my website. It's www.drannwelsh.com. I'm on Instagram. It's Dr. Welsh or dr.welsh.coaching. I'm often posting over there about working parenthood and kind of self-acceptance. And then also on LinkedIn, which is just Dr. Ann Welsh, post all sorts of things about leadership, perfectionism, people pleasing, a lot of the things we talked about today. I love to get messages, love to be resourced. You know, if you're somewhere that you're like, I don't know where to look for a therapist, hit me up. I'll help you find someone. Or if you have questions about any of the things we talked about today too, happy to answer those.
That's really great. We'll post links to all that on our site. And do you offer like remote coaching sessions as well?
It's interesting. Therapy is one of those things that's regulated state to state. Right. So that I'm in Massachusetts and I can only do therapy in Massachusetts. But again, if listeners are like, I can't find someone, let me know and I'll see if I know anybody that's taking patients in the state that you're in. But for coaching, I can do that anywhere in the country, so, or anywhere in the world, really. So anyone that would be curious, and listeners, any part of the world here can reach out for that.
Cool. Awesome.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, thank you. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ann. Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of We Earn Media. Jacqueline and I have a bit of a favor to ask. If you find the podcast useful and have an extra minute or two to spare, we would be incredibly grateful if you could take just a moment to leave a rating. Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps others discover our show. Thank you so much, listeners, for being a part of our PR community, and we can't wait to hear what you think. Also, I'm excited to announce that I'm offering publicity and PR coaching sessions. I've been getting a few requests for this kind of support. If you're a startup founder, someone trying to build your personal brand, or simply just trying to level up your PR skills, I would love to help. It's something I'm really passionate about, and it's really fun just to connect with others in the community too. Feel free to send me a message at brit@britclance.com. Thanks again, listeners, for your time and for sharing in this journey with us.